سلام خوش آمدید.
مرحبا اهلا وسهلا.
ناشنیکا خوانیان غمیدا.
سلام علیکم شرغلا.
هولا بیانوینیدوس.
Здравствуйте, добро пожаловать.
Hello. Welcome to our podcast, DLI FLC Lingo.
So yeah, when I was here as a student back in 1999, the Marines would always destroy us on the RIN team. And we got frustrated by it, so we're like, well, what can we do to mess with them? Mm-hmm. At the time, the Marines there, if any time they heard the Marine Corps hymn, their CO made them stop. So we started taking our Walkmans, chasing them down, playing the Marine Corps hymn, so they'd have to stop and be there the entire time, make one of our sailors stay there, and then pass them and loop them, and then they'd come chase us back down.
It's playing dirty.
Yes, it is. Well, that's why I'm a submariner. Like, we find a solution to the problem.
We're doing a podcast series on getting to know DLI. Each episode, I'm interviewing a different group of people to give you an idea of what it's like to live and work here in Monterey. This week, I'm talking with four MLIs, or Military Language Instructors, Air Force Master Sergeant Alex Ayudo, Army Staff Sergeant James Fedo, Marine Sergeant Joan Lee, and Navy Senior Chief Petty Officer Jason Noble. Okay, so let's start with getting to know you questions. So let's start with you, Alex.
My full name is Alessandro Ayuto. It's an Italian name. My dad's Italian. There's some more backstory there, but we'll leave it at that for now. I'm a Master Sergeant in the U.S. Air Force. I'm an Arabic linguist now. I started my career as an Uzbek linguist back when DLI taught Uzbek for a few years. Because I came through in about, I started class in 06, and so at that time it was kind of like in the peak of the Uzbek and other like sort of less commonly taught languages as a response to Operation Enduring Freedom and the needs of Afghanistan. So I was like caught in that wave of linguist training. Then after doing that job for a few years, I came back here in 2012 to learn Arabic. And so I've been doing that job and came back here to be an instructor in 2019. So I came here as an MLI, and then last year I applied for and got selected for the chief MLI position I'm in now.
Okay. All right. I want to hear more about the Italian thing.
Okay. Now? All right. I was born in Italy. I was born in Sicily. My dad was in the Italian Air Force. My mom was in the American Navy for 8 years. So they met because at the time, in 1984-ish, they were both stationed at SHAPE, which is Supreme Headquarters, Allied Powers Europe, over in Belgium. And so they met there and hit it off and got together. And then, so after that assignment, my mom actually got out of the Navy and moved with my dad back to his next assignment, which is in Italy, near his hometown, fortunately, actually. So they all went there, and I was born there and spent a few years there before moving to the States when my mom... The way she said it, she got sick of being away from her family, so she decided to move back with me and my sister to America near where her parents live in Vermont. And my dad stayed in Italy for the next 6 years, finishing out his time in the Italian Air Force, and then he joined us later. So that's how that kind of went down.
Oh, that's really cool. So you learned the languages, you got familiar with languages that way?
Sort of, yeah. I got some exposure to, I think I got like a very like unconscious sort of appreciation of the difference between languages as a kid. I mean, of course, my mom, she brags about me way more than I deserve. She imagines that I was like fluent in both languages as a 4-year-old. I think my recollection is I probably knew some survival, you know, phrases and words in Italian in addition to the English, but I never really mastered Italian, you know. But anyway, even that little exposure, I think, does kind of like configure your brain a certain way to sort of like adapt to languages. So I think that was the main benefit for me. Yeah, and how I ended up sort of like taking that to a career in languages later on.
Yeah. How close is Uzbek to Arabic?
Not really. The only similarity between Uzbek and Arabic is that there are some words that are shared between the two because, you know, over the ages, there have been like Islamic conquests of Central Asia, which forced some cross-pollination of language between the two. But Uzbek is based off, it's in the Turkic family of languages, so it's really similar to the Turkish language, and there's the other Central Asian languages that are similar to that, like Kazakh and Kyrgyz and Turkmen. Those are all very similar languages, but grammatically and everything, those are very different from Arabic, which is classified as a Semitic language, like Hebrew. So
the way the languages grow and change is just fascinating.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, yeah, we're all kind of a global melting pot in a way, just because no modern civilization has remained isolated from the world, you know. So that we all kind of have a little bit of exposure to our other cultures.
Yeah. So do you go by James or do you go by Gemma? I've forgotten.
James.
Oh, that's right. James. You didn't like to shorten it.
I don't hate Jim. I'm just not Jim.
Good answer.
James Fido, Staff Sergeant in the Army. Unlike Alex, I have no idea where my name's from. Don't ask. Fido's a mystery to everyone. Joined the Army 9 years ago. Came through DLI. I've been a linguist my whole time. Russian linguist. I am from a military family. This is all I ever wanted to do. And then I joined the military and was like, oh, hey, turns out this was like a good idea. I thought it was a crazy idea, and then I did it. And I was like, oh, I'm good at this. Fun fact about me, I'm a DLI marriage. I know. I met my wife in class, in my Russian class, in the same section, six people, and we were next to each other. And we're still together 8 years later, so it can work.
You're going to bring bad hope to all this.
Oh, yeah, no, don't do it, obviously. It's
0.00001%
of DLI. The first year of marriage was just sheer, like, just stubbornness. I was like, we're going to get through this. We're going to get through this because I'm not going to let anyone tell me they were right and I was wrong. And, you know, eventually from that, like, love blooms or whatever. But, yeah, things are going well.
She's going to love this podcast.
Oh, no, she's going to be super stoked.
Okay, so I keep wanting to call you Joe. Do you go by Joan or Joe or Lee?
I go by Sergeant Lee.
Okay, set the standard there. Noted. Tone change.
My first name is Joan. But I'm not like an 80-year-old grandma, so no one really sees me as a Joan or a Joe or an Ann or whatever. It's definitely not Joanne. Please don't call me that.
Okay, so tell me about yourself, where you're from, and how you got here.
I'm from New York, New York, born and raised there, and then we moved to Greenwich, Connecticut after, like, when I was, like, 11, and then I joined the Marine Corps from there. My parents are from Korea, so I'm first-gen American. So I grew up in a bilingual household, like speaking Korean and English, and my first language in New York City was Italian, because they offered that there.
That's crazy.
I know, I thought it was hilarious. And then when I moved to Connecticut, they only offered Spanish and French, so I had to switch. So I took Spanish for about 10 years through middle school, high school, and college before I came here, and they were like, you're going to be a Spanish ling. And I was like, great. So I'm a Spanish linguist. I work at UML, but I'm also currently covering down on Tagalog, Hebrew, French, and Japanese because we're having a shortage.
So when you came here with those years of Spanish, how was your schooling? Like, when you came through DLI, how was it?
It was okay. It was fun because a lot of it was review or like a refresher. We did, when we got to semester three of the course, we touched on some stuff that we never touched on in like the 10 years of school before, because apparently every time you restart Spanish in the new school year, they want to start you at zero, because that makes a lot of sense.
Sure.
Yeah. So I never got to like the really hard Spanish stuff until I came here. But because I was doing okay in academics, I had a lot of free time to pursue other interests. And so I feel like my time here as a student was fruitful because I had a lot of time for other things. But it makes me feel bad for, you know, all the students who have to, like, sit down every night for 6 hours and study and homework and all that good stuff.
Okay. And when did you come through here?
I came through here in 2014, I think.
Okay. All right. And so, Jason, let's talk about where you're from and how you got here.
So I'm going to introduce my whole name, Jason Aaron Noble. And the reason I'm going to say that is because I'm actually named after Elvis Presley. Thank God my father convinced my mother not to name me Elvis Noble because my childhood would have been way worse. But Elvis Aaron Presley, Jason Aaron Noble. So I can live with Jason and go by Jason. From Cincinnati, Ohio. Joined the Navy to get out of Ohio, right? Appreciated where I was from, but I just wanted something different, wanted something that had a beach, some water, or anything like that. Fell into being a linguist, had no idea what it was. I was the kid that showed up to DLI and said, I'll do whatever you want. I had no proclivity to what language, so they said, well, what's your background? I was like, well, I was in choir, I did a lot of theater, and they're like, oh, Chinese, that's good for you. Which worked out, right, with the tones and speaking and just being dynamic. I was a Chinese linguist, went through DLI 1999 to 2001, graduated, loved being on subs, went straight to subs from DLI. After being in Hawaii too long, which I know sounds weird to some people, the Navy said, well, if you want to get out of Hawaii, learn another language. So I learned Somali and went to DLI East in 2010. Picked up Somali and then did that style mission for the next, you know, part of my career until coming here as an instructor, which was fun. But Chinese and Somali is definitely a weird combination.
Oh, yeah. That's crazy.
You deal with those pirates.
Yes, a lot of pirates, anti-piracy stuff, and counterterrorism, which was definitely different than your traditional Chinese mission set, for sure.
You told a really great story about being on a plane, like your apex of
so, your... Yeah, so the apex of my language ability, right? In high school, I took German, too, because, you know, I'm a larger youth. When we had the options of learning Spanish or German or French, I like German because my family's German, and then also you learn by beer drinking song anyway. So I retained a lot of that. But one time when I was flying from Ethiopia to Djibouti, Africa, in front of me, there was a Somali businessman trying to translate a Chinese person and a German person talking to each other. And it was hilarious to hear somebody be like, I don't know what you're saying in German, and the person going, I don't know how to translate that in Chinese to the other person, Somali, and I'm like, I can't talk to you, but this is what I was made for. It's like the epitome of everything. But it was just kind of cool to see that, you know, one, other people struggle, but then two, my German was still functional.
To go into that, you also mentioned that that was your best career move, was taking Somali in.
Right, just being a little, I don't like being stagnated. And so when you, Chinese obviously has a wealth of opportunity and you can easily stay into it. But when I switched to Somali, it opened up a whole new world to me. I never did the CT mission before, never got to do anything with boots on ground. So that's got me into that kind of that tip of the spear, special warfare type stuff. And then after that tour, I really was able to build on that with both languages. And that was by far the best move. So in coming back to DLI as an instructor, that's really why I wanted to come back, was just to tell, you know, linguists here, like, what you think you'll be doing, what I thought at 19 years old of what I thought this job is, you have no clue. So just do the best you can now because you'll have a wealth of opportunity.
Okay. So I think, James, you had something really interesting about what your best and worst career move was.
Oh, yeah. I found a passion, and this is going to sound insane for anyone who's familiar with it, so I found my passion in the Army S3 shop. That's like our operations section. That's where we...
What a leg.
Yeah. Yeah, I know. Desk work. The key defining feature is I'm good behind a desk, but I found out that, like, that's what I like doing. I spent the best 2 years of the Army career not using language at all. Basically kind of running, or I was in charge of a bunch of soldiers, and then there were also a bunch of officers and senior NCOs that I was the shadow governor of, meaning that I was the one who made things happen, and they got pats on the head. But as long as everyone accepts a shadow governor, things work just fine. So yeah, I spent 2 years in the S3 shop. I did everything. I have a weirdly, like, it's the coolest, it was the coolest experience to see how the sausage gets made in the Army. I think that, like, that was to me a really neat and unique experience because, especially for a linguist, because they don't take linguists off of language missions very often, especially Russian linguists in Europe, in a position where we needed Russian linguists, and especially for 2 years. I begged for that second year. And Sergeant Major let me stay because, as he put it, you're fun to have around. I like to think that helps. 2 years. It's called the worst career decision of my life because it broke me physically, emotionally. I gained anxiety. I was working 12-hour days, 5 days a week. I was on call on weekends. I was on call on nights. I was on call on leave. The amount of times I was on leave and got calls like, hey, what do we do? I'm like, oh, okay, here's what you do. I could talk people through processes over the phone, like strangers. But sit down at your computer, log in, here's what we're going to do. Gained like 30 pounds in like a year. In the first year there, I was pushing like 210 just from stress eating and
lack of exercise.
That's the point. Yeah, I knew that. I was like, there was something in here. It's not lazy because I was doing things, but I'm not like a PT person, so it was like, hey, I could go to PT or I could do this work thing. And they're like, well, you're way better at work than you are at PT. Go do work.
So how is this your best then?
I've never been happier or more fulfilled in a position. I've worked as a Russian linguist for 6 years. I have never felt that amount of job satisfaction before. Kind of get it as an MLI, or more as like the chief MLI role. Turns out I work best when things are on fire. I work best when there are emergencies. And I'm good at big picture stuff.
So it's ironic because my best and worst career decision is the same thing.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So I went on an IA, like an individual augment deployment by myself, and I was attached to an army shop in Kuwait. Only army. The first group that was there, 10th Mountain, they were good to go. Fun to work with. We all got the job done. But the second group that came in after was 82nd Airborne, and they made me want to do very bad things. So I was the only person in that job for some reason, 3 week period where there was nobody else. Like 10th Mountain went home, and then 3 weeks later, 82nd came in, and it was just me.
Sounds like planning.
It's good army planning, right? So I was a continuity piece. I taught everyone how to do the day and the night shift of that job. It was a 12-hour shift every day, except for there was one day a week you could pick a half day. So it was fine, right? I could work that schedule, and I did. But the problem was when 82nd came in and I taught them how to do literally everything, those Army folks gave me such a hard time. Like, you know, throw crayons at me every day, you know, like mess with my workstation. So I went to the colonel, who happened to be a Marine, and he was the only one who, like, he was the only Marine in the chain of command that I worked with, period. And so, like, I went to him, and he knew what the struggle was. And there were, like, a few random sprinkles of Marines on that base, and they were also all IAs, so we all, you know, would get together. We planned a trip to Greece, which is great. They would invite me on their Marine PMEs, professional military education, which they still did on deployment. But I made a lot of good friends out there, a lot of three-letter agency contacts, too, because they were working, like, right next door to us.
How was that your best again?
Oh, it was great, because I made good connections, and I had a lot of opportunities to do things I would never be able to do. Like, for the Marine PMEs, half of them were real PMEs. Like, we discussed books and, like, Marine Corps knowledge and orders and stuff. But then the other half of the time, it was like us going out in town to eat food and to go to camel races and to visit the aquarium.
Culture.
Yeah, culture. It's culture, PME. But it was terrible because of the Army side of the house.
So, Alex.
Tell us a good story. Me and Leo over here, like, yeah. We like the pain.
Hey. Would you like me to comment on my best career decision?
Yes.
Okay. Well, yeah, I'm like Sergeant Lee, I don't... My brain, I guess I'm lucky in the sense I don't focus a lot on negative experiences, which I'm sure I've had many, but I just sort of like... I tend to just forget about them, I guess, instead of just...
Repression.
Yeah, being haunted by it, I guess. Yeah. Yeah. Maybe I am repressing it, yeah, and it's yet to come out. But so when I thought about answering that question, a good thing, in my opinion, came to mind. Now, I've had a longish career, so, I mean, there's been a lot of things I could really comment on, but one thing that came to my mind was, just to set some background, I think a lot of people in the military, you know, we're encouraged to develop ourselves professionally and personally over our careers, right? And one form that takes is pursuing, like, a civilian education. In our career field, I think it's common for people to sort of, like, just to check a box and, like, go for a degree that you're already, all, like, 90% of the way to getting just through whatever credits you've earned through your professional education. I think a lot of people do that because, yeah, like, to higher ups, it doesn't matter what your degree is in, just as long as you have one. But I kind of, like, rejected that pressure and decided to go with something that was actually, like, an area of interest for me, which is computer science. I took a, an online degree program. I spent, like, 6 years doing it, used a lot of free TA money to get it done. But in the end, I felt like it was worth it because, the thing, even though I had an interest in that area already, what I didn't imagine is how many ways you can apply those skills, even in our job in the military. And those of you who worked in, admin jobs, like what we all do here, but you can imagine, the amount of opportunity there is to apply those kinds of skills. Surprisingly, even in my more, Intel missions, I fly, or I did fly on an aircraft performing my job there using a proprietary operating system. And so those skills can apply there because you can work with it to automate certain tasks. You can leverage it to make you just more effective. And I don't know, it's just like, it's one of those things where I guess I didn't even imagine how good it would turn out, but I'm glad I did it because it made me sort of a unique asset within my own niche of a career field as it was. So that's kind of how I look at it.
Okay. So, different question. I thought yours was really interesting. What was the last TV show you binge watched?
Oh, well, that's not very interesting. But because you're really hearing how much of a nerd I am in all these answers. There's a show on Netflix that was just recently released called Archive 81. I don't know if you guys have probably seen it because they've been pushing it. Right? It's being advertised pretty heavily. Any of you watched it yet?
I watched it. My wife's a librarian, so.
She watched it?
Yeah. Is it the cartoon, or is it like a real person?
No, it's like, regular live action.
Like Ozark, where they have like weird graphics
yeah. on it? Yeah. Sort of. I mean, so it's not that type of show. It's like the way I characterize it, it's like a mystery, horror, sci-fi, kind of all together. Mm-hmm. And it's not everyone's cup of tea, I know that.
I told my wife it was like a modern version of The Ring, but different.
Yeah, sort of, exactly. That's actually a really good way of putting it. But I liked it because I thought, it's kind of like a unique premise. But I was really into like sci-fi fantasy type stuff where it's like, okay, so there's this demon from another world, another dimension that we're slowly getting to know more about through the course of the telling of the story.
Somebody and watching the stories, so what?
Yeah, exactly. It's like, to me, I just like it. I love it when you're able to, when a creator of a show is able to like have this idea, but then. Put it on screen in a way that you can really, bring that imagination full circle and, show you what it would really be like rather than just relying on your own imagination to fill in the gaps. Like, it's really hard, I think, to take an idea and visualize it or embody it on screen, effectively, but I think they did a good job with that. And I don't know, I'm just really into that stuff. Just, I don't know, crazy, alternate reality sci-fi, what other possibilities are there.
See, what made me like the show, because you talked about having a long career, and I think at this table I meet that metric in spades, was part of the show is they take cassette tapes, and he restores the cassette tape. And early in my career, with the systems we worked, I remember taking big old reels of tape everywhere we go and having to use that. I'm like, I can totally identify with that.
Right, yeah.
That is a really painful thing to do.
I just missed out on that generation. Yeah. But you're right, yeah, that was a real thing.
You're watching Stranger Things going, I feel represented by this model.
Right. Or judged. Yeah.
So what was, yours, I'd never heard of either. What was yours?
I traditionally hate K-dramas because, they're all about love.
Boo.
And I know where she's going with this.
My sister periodically recommends K-dramas, and I don't usually watch them. But this one I did. It's called A Korean Odyssey. It has to do with, demons and stuff. And so it's, kind of like fantasy and real life. because there's this, you know, little girl, you see her grow up, I guess, and she's just fighting, like, demons and stuff and soul. There is, in fact, a love part that does play a big role, but they manipulate it, so it's not as, like, lovey-dovey crap stuff
like
I don't want to watch.
Plot device, maybe, like it is in some other
It is, because, you know, it's there's, like, the devil and then, like, a another deity, but she basically is able to chain this deity to use him to help her kill all, like, the demons and stuff. It's really complicated, but, you know, most K-dramas are, so you can't do anything about
awesome.
That.
Are there any, what's, like, the most famous K-drama that people may have heard of? Because I don't know if I've ever seen one.
I've only watched two other than this one.
Yeah. See, I was like, I heard K-drama, I thought maybe Squid Game, but apparently I don't even know what
no,
a K-drama
that's not
is.
A K-drama. That's just like a...
It's a Netflix show.
It's a Netflix show. It was pretty good, Squid Game.
Yeah, I like that.
Yeah, I do too.
I also really liked Kingdom. It has zero love interest, which is great, and it's about zombies, like, set in, like, the old Joseon era of Korea.
So why is the love part bad?
For me? Because I'm just not into that crap. Oh, in K-dramas, I think people really like it because, I don't know.
I don't like love. K-dramas.
Every Mirian's going, yes, I know what she's saying.
No, because it's all like, I don't want to see that in front of me, and I don't want to see it on TV. Like, it's unrealistic. It's, like, romance is great, but it's, like, over the top.
Is this like telenovelas?
Yeah, except telenovelas is all about, like, the drama after you kill somebody. Then the K-dramas are all about, like, the drama concerning a love interest. Mm-hmm. And it's always, like, unrequited love or love that can never happen.
Yeah.
Ew. Okay, note to self. I don't do the drama either, but
this is not going in my algorithm.
But Kingdom with the zombies,
yeah,
is
totally
good.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's different. It's like the first one I've ever watched besides Squid Games. It's like not about a love interest whatsoever, and that's great.
And yours is actually fairly normal.
Well, I mean, I think it's because, like, I have three kids, so typically I end up watching everything that my kids watch during my spare time because they suck up every time I have. So if I remember what I was talking about is, like, we love Star Wars as a family, so, like, I watched Mandalorian, we watched the Boba Fett series, and my oldest, who's on the spectrum, was like, okay, if you love this story, you need to watch the Star Wars clone animated series.
Yep.
And, like, I got lectured every day if I don't binge watch this so aww. I very rarely binge watch something. I just take the minute I have, but that was one that I actually sat down with him and said, okay, we're going to take the weekend, we're going to do this. I didn't realize it was so many years.
Oh.
and so yeah, we spent several weekends binge watching this show, but it was actually, aside from a couple of the story arcs, mm-hmm. was really good. So I learned that, you know.
Is it like the Letterkenny clone animated series?
No, that's terrible. It's
so bad.
I'm a huge Star Wars buff.
Shock me, right? Like, link with us here in this community.
Yeah. I've never seen it before.
The first time I was here, I got a Princess Leia tattoo. I only have two tattoos, and one of them is a big pinup of Princess Leia on my chest.
You're going to have to show us that.
Cool. I was just thinking, please, no. Thank God we're on radio.
It's like really well to the podcast, but I'm excited about it nonetheless. So, the Star Wars, boff. The short answer is the Clone Wars were really good. The Clone Wars were Dave Filoni.
Yeah.
And, I'm also, like, a big fan of...
I'm gonna fast forward through this part. James has a deeply held love of the animated Star Wars series, which also comes with some deeply held beliefs. If you feel you found your kindred spirit in James, you can stop by his office and continue the discussion there. He'd welcome it.
Love it, love it, love it.
This is exactly how the conversations with myself.
Yeah, I thought that the second I started, I was like, ah, beans. I think I'm info dumping on it. Uh-oh.
No, everything you just went.
Right.
Yeah. I heard it. I saw the dead look in your eyes. I'm like, oh,
I
God,
just,
this again.
I haven't seen it. I don't get the hype.
I'll be honest.
I don't really care.
Have you seen any Star Wars, like, at all? Or
no.
Just, yeah.
Oh.
No, wait, not even the originals?
Movies
no.
and stuff.
Oh. At this point... Eh. Like, don't...
I don't get it.
You're... I grew up with it, right?
Right.
My dad was a big Star Wars guy. I grew up with it. is a integral part of my childhood.
Yep, I remember Return of the Jedi in theaters. Exactly. Like, so it's,
well, I don't have that, but
I get called old at work every day.
I remember Phantom of, I remember The Phantom Menace in theaters. I remember
that graduating high school.
Yeah, I didn't want to call attention, but you said 99. I was like, oh.
Oh, no. One of my sailors, worst moment of my career. You sit down here trying to mentor people, and I was like, oh, yeah, when I joined in 99. Senior, you joined last century? And those words in that sentence, I was just like, and I can't murder you, but those thoughts are in my...
I mean, he's not lying.
I feel like, you don't have to say it.
It's hurtful. I'm a person,
too.
Putting
it out there? God, it's so rude. Because Lee seemed eager, so I wanted
to... No, I want to hear your
well,
guys.
Well, fine, I can go first. So, like, I love music, right? That's a Chinese thing. So, like, growing up, my dad listened to classic rock, so I grew up on CCR and stuff mm-hmm. like that. My brother, 7 years older than me, loved 80s hair bands. So, me growing up, I liked, you know, like, Pac and Biggie and different things like that to really present the persona of, like, I'm going to rebel against you. But my guilty pleasure as a kid and still now is 80s, like, bubblegum pop, like, Tiffany's yeah. and stuff like that. And, like, I've been caught, like, people would expect, like, you would hear something and it's bubblegum pop. And then my kids pick on me because the linguist in me, I like to incorporate different things as well. Mm-hmm. So there's a Chinese, or not Chinese, Mongolian throat music called
yes.
The Who.
I've heard of that.
I love doing that. Yes. And then my kids found on, like, because I didn't realize that my music library shares to their phone. So one day my son comes in and says, what is Rammstein and German death metal? Why do you have this? So those are my guilty pleasures. The Who, Rammstein, and Tiffany.
I feel like I just need a sample of Tiffany.
No.
Come on, let's hear that dynamic voice.
Dynamic voice, yes.
Dynamic
running
voice.
Just as fast as I can, holding on to one another's hand. Not going to be sung. Nope, we're good. I can do a run cadence if you want. We'll just, you know, break it with kill every sentence and we'll be good to go. But I'm not going to sing it. So now, your turn.
Oh, my turn. Okay, yeah. So, I like a genre of music. I can't explain why it speaks to me. I don't share the same life experiences or backgrounds as the things they're singing about. I can't explain it. It's super weird, but it answers something in my soul that I don't understand. So anyways, what I like is called folk punk. Yeah, it's exactly what it sounds like. You're like, that sounds like two things that don't go together. They don't, and that's why it's great. So it's all the anarchy of punk. It's all the anti-capitalism, anti-consumerism. The people should rise. Probably some socialism in there. And just general like community bonding at the local level, right? All that punk vibe. And it's usually done on acoustic guitars, almost always a harmonica. It's done a very funky, it's definitely
it's like it's Blues Travelers, Beats, Blink 182.
The singers are very, they are usually just kind of screaming along. Like, I'm not musically inclined. I don't hear it well. I'm pretty tone deaf. So I don't think they're on beat all the time. I think they're kind of just singing their heart out. Some of the biggest names are like, my favorite thing is like one of the biggest names, Pat the Bunny, like just doesn't do music anymore. He's at the top of his career, but he quit. And now he's an IT programmer. Like, he just had to quit because the lifestyle was just hard drinking and heroin. And so now he's done. Your soft intro is the Mountain Goats. Get into the Mountain Goats, and then from there, kind of devolve.
Wow. I'm stupid enough to throw my life away on music like it was that simple. But if singing changed anything, they'd make it illegal. I hate strangers, loud noises, and crowds.
Thank you for sharing.
Yeah, I don't know. I can't play my music around other people. Like, if I'm driving, I have to listen to it very quietly and let other people talk over it. And I just hear little snippets because it's not good. It's not good. People don't like it. I don't know why I like it, but it fills a void.
Love that. Alex, we didn't get to hear yours.
Guilty pleasure?
Yes.
All right, well, I know, I think I had prepared one answer, but as James was explaining his, really, it brought Heroine, another right? idea. No, no, not that part of it.
No, no.
Wait, no, give me your original.
Okay, and then, I will, yeah, and then I will. Well, so my sister was an aspiring singer, so she's a slightly older sister, so as her little brother, I would frequently be forced to listen to her favorite music when I was growing up, and that was like Mariah Carey was like her. She was so into Mariah Carey, and so I, just by sheer force, you know, I was beaten into submission and to appreciating just how good of a singer she was.
She's a
and
great
so, like,
singer.
She is a great singer. That's the thing. So like,
especially at Christmas time.
Yeah. No. Okay. I hate Christmas music. So like, that's like the one thing I won't listen to. Yeah. No. I know. Like, you don't want to get into that discussion, but I'm not into the Christmas music. Well, that's we can save that for another podcast if you want. No.
That
yeah.
Will
but,
not be another podcast.
And why I'll they hate you. Fun.
Yeah. Same time next month, right, guys? Okay. I like music just in general. Like, I'm a huge music fan, and so I don't, like, listen to Mariah Carey all the time, but, like, I will, on occasion, I'll just find myself being like, hey, let's listen to some, like, early 90s, like, pop music, like, what I grew up to, and I'll just be like, yeah, man, what a, throw on some Mariah Carey. Man, she is so good. She's still so good. You go back and listen. But, no, my real guilty pleasure, if I'm being honest, though, what I, sort of like Beto, like, you're ashamed of your interest in music. Well, I have an interest in genres of music that I think most people find unlistenable as well. Like, but for me, it's a totally different vibe. It's like fast beat, like electronic music, like psychedelic trance, or like happy hardcore. Like, for me, I don't know. That's just like, it just matches my brain waves somehow. It's just like the high energy aspect of it is just like exactly what I'm into. And all the like complex, like all the instruments that are used, and just like, I don't know, it's like, there's no message behind it, it's just like pure energy in sound form, so like, that's my thing, like, that's what I really love listening to.
I don't know if you ever heard, you ever watched or Googled the website Homestar Runner? Like,
yeah,
all of a sudden, I'm like envisioning the cheat with the glow stick and the light ray.
Yeah, that's like, I don't know why, but that's the music that speaks to me.
We all shared it. It's your turn.
Okay. So, when I was in high school, in the 2006 to 10 era, this particular artist was very popular, only amongst the young females, and I hated it back then.
Gotta be a male. Huh?
And then, if it was enjoyed by a male, it was definitely their guilty pleasure.
No, the singer.
No,
was
the singer.
Male. Yeah, if it was all.
Artist.
I have a guess, and I'm not going to spoil it, but I have a guess.
I was 26 and deploying at this point, so I'm like, I have no reference point.
But then when I joined the Marine Corps, I saw that all the recon dudes at my battalion were in love with this artist. And then I did a SIGINT and shooting package in 2019, I think, and I was the only girl rolling around with a bunch of dudes in Fredericksburg, Virginia, and they just put it on blast every single day. Any free moment we had as prep before we like went out to shoot, or even prep before we went out to the bar. And then I grew to like this particular album that this person came out with during that time period.
Oh, grew on you.
It's just this particular album and just like two songs on it. What's your guess?
It's changed now, okay? I thought it was going to be Bieber, but that's just because you said teenage girls in high school in mid-2000s. I was like, Bieber, and then the more recon dudes you described liking this music, I don't know anymore. But
it's Taylor Swift.
Oh, hell yeah, brother.
Yeah.
How many days did I spend thinking about how you did me wrong? Lived in the
I so hated when she came out with her
first
music.
Are you like shooting targets with the
it
breakup
was stupid.
Songs?
Yeah, like literally that's what it was like every single day.
T Swizzle is a bop. Every one of her songs.
Was that English? What did you just say? T Swizzle is a bop.
T Swizzle is a bop. All her music is great. I'm not elaborating.
no, I need that translated. What is a bop? What is that? T-Swizzle like, is Taylor Swift. What is...
It means her music is great. It's amazing. can bop along to it.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. All right. That makes sense.
It's recycling, right? We take slang from the 80s and recycle it into the modern day, and so now a bop bops are back in. Oh, as a E6, there's nothing funnier. Like, I highly recommend both of you get on TikTok, because there is nothing funnier.
The Chinese than, and the linguist in me said, no.
They already have your data. You'll be fine. There is nothing funnier than being a dude in his 30s at a staff sergeant rank using modern day like TikTok slang to students who are 18 years old. It is hilarious.
It is hilarious.
See, I've graduated to, like, I'm now classical or refined because I'm a dude in my 40s, so.
Fair. Cool. He is kind of refined. I didn't want to say it. Okay.
Crusty, refined, salty. There's lots of different adjectives I'll accept.
Special thanks to Jim Martin, our recording studio and audio programming guru. Also thanks to our guests, Alex, Lee, Jason, and James. Music clips by Pat the Bunny, Tiffany, DJ Electric Samaria, and Taylor Swift.